Vominos? What do you, how do you say go?
How are you, man?
Oh, man.
Be honest.
I've had better days. I've had better months.
Yeah.
You know what? Strike that. I've had better months.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
Why don't we...
I'm sorry. You've had a lot going on.
There's been a lot going on. Well, maybe we'll introduce the show and ourselves, and then maybe I'll just cry a little bit. Let's do it that way. Okay.
Well, I'll say this. This podcast is called Modern Dadhood. It's an ongoing conversation about the joys, the challenges, and the general insanity of being a dad in this moment.
That's it.
My name's Adam Flaherty. I'm a dad to two daughters who are 10 and 7. You might hear in my voice, I've got a slight bit of congestion because just getting over COVID, second experience with it, which I have to say only lasted a few days between testing positive and testing negative. And it really was only like a cold. Yeah. And you, who are you?
I'm glad. Oh, my name's Mark Checkett. I am also a father. I have two boys. They're twins, 6 years old.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the sickness, man, that's you know, that's part of it. That's part of what's got me down,
yeah. Dude.
I mean, can I just, like, I don't even know what to call it. It's not really venting, but can I just ramble for a minute?
You can. Yeah, I'll say, you guys, anybody who has kids in and out of their homes, yeah, Bringing stuff home from school, like, deals with plenty of viruses and sickness, yeah, but you guys just can't catch a break.
No. Yeah, most listeners are going to know the struggle. And I think it's a real... I do think this year is a little wacky. But yeah, I don't know, man. We've just been on this sort of round robin of things. It was multiple people in the house with the flu. Mm. Multiple people in the house with strep throat. We had one kid who had strep throat and a double ear infection at the same time. And then a few days after that, he started puking everywhere. And dude, then there was a stomach bug that went around and it just kept going. It was like one kid, then the next kid, then Jamie got it. And I got some weird combination of just all of it. I can't even describe like the exhaustion. There was a couple nights where I had these intense like bouts of just like uncontrollable shivers that were just bonkers. Man. I mean, I started puking at one point too. I mean, and that was at the point where I was kind of just looking at myself in the mirror in the bathroom, like I don't even understand what's going on right now.
That's so miserable.
Yeah, it was kind of miserable. And then my poor kids, it's been a month where one or both kids. So, I mean, it's just been so many trips back to the doctor, back and forth. And I mean, we're going to the doctor just being like, what?
Yeah. Anything, just give us something to make this
please.
Better.
Yeah.
Oh, and dude, I mean, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
It's terrible.
In the midst of it, all of it, we lost our dog, you know, 15 years old, and we've had her almost that whole time. She's really was a part of the Checkett family. And then just over the last month, she just took a dive. She just took a dive, and her health just like really went down really fast. So that's been tough too.
Yeah. Never easy. Especially when you got young kids who don't really have any experience with death.
Yeah, no. And it's, I mean, you know, you try to look at situations like this, you try to find the positive in situations. And, you know, it was an opportunity to talk about death.
Yep.
And for them to sort of witness just that, I guess, that part of life. It was just the four of us kind of all heaped in a tangled clump on the floor. Just a good, long, sobbing cry.
Yep. And nothing can replace Rigby, but the pain will fade.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry. I'm really sorry you guys have been dealing with that. The boys are lucky to have you and Jamie, you know, to guide them through, usher them through the process and teach them about it and give them space to ask the questions, even when it's hard or inconvenient for you.
Yeah.
And, you know, you will get through it. Sucks, but you will get through it.
True story. Well, Thanks for listening to me.
Of course. Therapy anytime. I'm always here to listen. We do have some other podcasty things to talk about.
Oh my God. This is a pod. I almost forgot about that. This is a podcast.
We are recording an episode here.
Yeah. Well, what else?
There's a few things that we should share. First of all, there's a guest for this episode who was an awesome chat, an inspirational person, someone who brought lots of joy and love to modern dadhood. And that guest was Dr. Francois Clemens, who was on Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, played the character Officer Clemens for a stretch of many years. And we'll play back that interview very soon. But he was just awesome, wasn't he?
A delight. Somebody I could probably listen to just tell stories. The things he's seen, the things he's gone through, his personal story. There's just so much richness there for him to, and he's animated and he can tell a story.
Yes, he can.
Just a fascinating individual. And I think folks are going to dig.
Couple of other things of note here. You and I cruised right through episode 100 without even making mention.
Didn't make a peep.
Of our centennial episode.
Didn't make a peep.
So this is episode 101, and I think that we should celebrate that we've crossed the threshold.
I mean, a little pat on the back, maybe? I mean, like, what do we, you know,
I mean, I'll job say well done. Congratulations to you.
Well, congratulations to you, man. I mean, you birthed the idea.
Well, you know,
let us not forget.
You were the doula, though. you sure. Yes.
Yeah, I like that. I was.
You brought it to life. And thanks to the listeners who new and old, the listeners who have been with us since the beginning. Thank you for making this what it is and helping us shape it. And new listeners, thanks for coming on board. This is a quick opportunity to say that you can find Modern Dadhood wherever you listen to podcasts. Every episode is available on moderndadhood.com. You can search by guest name or by topic, and we would love for you to check it out. Dig into the back catalog. Another quick note, our friend Pete Morse, who has been a guest on the show, but you'll probably know his name from us mentioning it in nearly every episode. He's been mixing our show forever. Pete is still in audio production and post-production. He is moving on from Modern Dadhood. This is a positive thing for him. I do a lot of work with him through my production business, and we'll continue to send him a lot of work and would recommend that other podcasters check him out at redvaultaudio.com and leverage his amazing ears and awesome audio mixing and mastering services. And I just want to say sincere thanks to him for helping us out with so many, I mean, dozens and dozens and dozens of Modern Dadhood episodes, just making us sound great. And the last thing here, not to bring us back down to another low, is several years ago we had Emilio Delgado on the podcast from Sesame Street, played Luis. He was amazing, like Francois Clemens, just a very inspirational guy who was a real game changer in terms of his representation of his ethnicity on television, which was rare at that time in the 70s and 80s. Emilio passed away a couple of years back. We were very lucky to get him on the podcast, but I also want to mention he had a son named Aram Delgado, who Emilio talked some about in the episode. And unfortunately, his son Aram just passed away recently, which is tragic. I mean, far, far too young. And there is a GoFundMe, which I'll link to in our episode notes, for his wife, Jenny, and their son, Eladio, which is Emilio's grandson, of course. And would just ask that listeners, if it's something you click through to and it resonates with you and you feel like you can spare any small amount of money to support support their family in the wake of Aram's passing, I'm sure that they would greatly appreciate it. And we would too. Hmm. So with that, Mark.
Some ups, a lot of downs so far.
I know.
Not every episode is quite like this, but hey man, life is like that sometimes.
No, right? That's right. And this is one of those pendulum episodes because it's about to swing real hard the other way with Dr. Francois Clemens, who is just a ray of sunshine and a beam of positivity. What do you say? Should we just get into it now?
Yeah. Strap in. Hold on to your seats, man. Grab the pendulum. About to swing.
Here goes. Dr. Francois Scarborough Clemens is an accomplished opera and gospel singer, a teacher, and he played one of the first recurring roles as an African-American character on an American TV series as Officer Clemens on Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, a role which lasted 25 years. Dr. Clemens, we are honestly thrilled and honored to have you on the podcast, so thank you for making time to join us.
Well, I'm very happy that it's worked out. It's nice to meet you guys.
What's life been like for you these days? I think you're located in Middlebury, Vermont.
Middlebury, Vermont, yes. I taught here for 27 years at the Middlebury College. And now I'm emeritus, retired.
Okay.
And, I try to stay busy singing and visiting with different organizations in the state. Mm-hmm. There's the Rokeby Museum, which specializes in African-American history in Vermont. And then there's the Folklife Museum, where I was on the board for about 7 years. And they have an awful lot of history that I find very enriching and encouraging, because people tend to think of Vermont as a 98% white state. I like Vermont, not the weather, the people.
Especially on a day like today, it's very cold.
Oh man, tell me about it. I'm not a cold water person, but I very, very much feel that this is my destiny to be here. I feel a calling.
Yeah, so you certainly keep yourself, it sounds like anyway, you keep yourself really, really busy these days, even though you started that sentence by saying you're retired.
People keep asking me, and asking me in the right way, something that I want to be a part of. I'm an extrovert, and I like being out in the neighborhood.
So, Dr. Clemens, you have lived a very rich and very full life, and the last thing I want to do is be dismissive of any parts of your incredible story, but the theme of our podcast is fatherhood and parenting. And so I think we're going to try to steer the conversation a little bit towards, you know, those themes of being a father figure and your relationship with Fred Rogers. So I do want to let the listeners know that if you're interested in learning about Dr. Clemens' fascinating life, he has this wonderful memoir that I'm part of the way through called Officer Clemens, which you can get at any bookstore. Go to your local bookstore and ask them to order it for you to support local. But I did want to say that because there's so much to your backstory that's so fascinating. And I wish we had time to cover all of it, but I do want to keep it on topic as much as possible.
So let's get into a little bit of stuff here as it pertains to Officer Clemens and Mr. Rogers. I think people might not necessarily recognize you immediately by your name, but would certainly be familiar with Officer Clemens. In fact, I'd be willing to bet a good part of our listeners and the population can start to even picture some of the iconic scenes from that show, which I think we're going to get into in just a minute or two. But I'm interested in hearing a little bit about the nature of your friendship with Fred Rogers. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Well, it operates on several levels. One is we were certainly professional. I was hired to sing and to develop the role of Officer Clemens. Mm-hmm. But because in 1968, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated on April 4th. And he came to me as a friend, a father, rather than just a professional person. And he took me to his home and I stayed there with him. I was deeply moved and hurt by this happening. All kinds of people were getting assassinated. So I spent a couple of months with him. And during that time, we kind of sealed our relationship as cosmic father and cosmic son. I also began to realize in talking with him what a deep spiritual person he was. We were discussing the Bible. I said at least 50% of the time. Fred was in Pittsburgh Theological Seminary at the time, trying to get his degree so that he could be ordained as a minister. And I had been raised in the Baptist church. Let me tell you, they study the Bible. So the times we were together were very, very special to discuss the different characters, the prodigal son, the good Samaritan, the role of David and Jonathan. There were a number of things we discussed. So he was already acting in the role of a surrogate father. So when I came here to Vermont, I felt that that was the natural place for me to be a surrogate father. There are many, many students here who, even though they have come here to college, they still need parenting. And that's my word for the kind of love and the kind of care that I gave to them based on the unconditional love that Fred Rogers had given to me. And then I generously passed it on to my students. And so we used to have discussions about my taking on the role of surrogate father to them and where I had learned it and what I had learned. And they would talk about the role that they are playing as my cosmic children and how much we fit into each other's lives. Quite frankly, it was deeply satisfying for me because years before, I realized that I wanted to be a parent, but as a gay man, I wanted to be openly gay about either adopting or whatever. And the career, it didn't work out on many levels. If you read the book, you know, there was a little boy who came to my door in New York, and I began to take him on as a surrogate son. And we spent quite a bit of time together. And so when I got here to Vermont, I knew some of what to do. And I continued to learn from my students. We felt a deep, deep need for the things that I talked about that were not necessarily being talked about so much on campus. And that was a need for a spiritual life. And that many of them, their parents had stopped sending them to church. They had not been shared the Old Testament, the New Testament, the life of Christ, and the different prophets. There are so many references that we make in our society about David and Goliath, David and those who know David and Jonathan, or Ruth and Naomi. And Fred and I began to talk about those things, and they drew us together. I was tired of the church because I felt they were pushing me away as a gay man. But I was fascinated that such a good person like Fred Rogers was not pushing me away the way the church did. So I stayed close to him. And of course, if you read the book, you understand that he said, you can be with us as much as you like, and et cetera, but you cannot be openly gay on the television show because the sponsors, Johnson & Johnson and Heinz 57 and all that, Mellon Bank, they would not tolerate an openly gay man on the camera. So I had to agree to stay in the closet, and I did for some 10, 15 years.
Wow.
And yes, it was a tremendous challenge, but I don't think the people who were watching Mr. Rogers had any idea of the sacrifice I made to stay on that program.
Yeah,
I did it because it was a golden opportunity for a young black actor, singer, to be cast in a role that was all over the country And I met some of the most wonderful people in the whole world. And I felt that that world would be closed to me if I decided to just go out and scream that I'm gay.
I love the notion of having a cosmic children. I think that's amazing. And I think that it's also powerful how that connects back to your desire as a younger man to have children of your own, whether biological or not, but to play that role of a parent. I wonder, even the spirituality component aside, what attributes or what features would help you to identify the students who you felt really could benefit from having a father figure role in their lives?
Well, yes, I think it did happen pretty naturally. I had an open door policy at my home, regardless of where I lived up here. And if there were troubled students, sometimes the faculty would suggest that we have a little visitation together, a little time. They needed consoling or understanding or kindness. So there would be random students who wound up coming by to see me. Or if they were from Zimbabwe or India or the Asia, they would say, my friend told me about you. And they come here from far away looking for me. Fred Rogers said, be kind, be kind, be kind. So that was always our password to one another, be kind.
I'm just listening to you talk. You know, I think something that I really like about that, you've used these phrases like cosmic son, cosmic universal father, universal son. There's something to me that it immediately takes something that we sort of think we have an understanding of, like son, and it broadens the view of it, which I think, and I'm feeling this sort of like allegory in all of these other areas that you're talking about as well, like educating students, you know, about their potential past. They haven't even had these conversations in their life. And here they are in college, much older, the very first time talking about these things, or, you know, what it means to be gay in the 1960s. And even though Fred Rogers had this very unique way about him where he did have a broad view, he existed in this world, and therefore you had to make these sacrifices because of a very narrow worldview that existed, you know? So there's just something interesting to me about that terminology that you're using and how it forces really quickly this broader view or this broader like understanding of, for the purposes of our conversation, what it means to be a father or a father figure to somebody. Because I think like something that we've come upon a few times in this show, in this podcast, talking with guests, is that you don't necessarily have to be like a biological dad, like have sired children, for lack of a better term.
No, you're absolutely right.
To be a, yeah, to play that role in someone's life. And you're wonderful living proof of the benefit of broadening your worldview, what it means to be a father. I'm just sort of understanding this as we're talking here about it.
Well, I felt that it was important to stretch the students' idea of what family was and what was the meaning of color to them. And just talk about those things that nobody back home said, openly, black people were this or that, or Asian people were different, or just because you're Jewish, you know, you're not this or not that. So we began to talk up under the surface into the depths of who we were and what we meant to one another. And one of the most beautiful experiences I had, I was upstairs in my former house where I used to live. And downstairs, I heard four or five of my students talking among themselves. One was from Nigeria. One was from Zimbabwe. The other was from Nepal. And a couple of Jamaican, Kieran, as I call them, were there. And they were having this discussion about the fact that they were cosmic brothers and sisters. And I have to tell you, I sat down on the top stair listening, and I started crying, and I couldn't stop. Because I realized that my message was getting across. And that experience and those students, what they were exploring, encouraged me to continue to reach out. I'm still in touch with many, many, many of my children.
There seems to be this strong parallel between your father figure relationship with these students and this father figure relationship that you described between yourself and Fred Rogers when you were a young man. And I want to explore that a little bit more, because I wonder, at what age were you when your parents passed away?
Oh, well, let's see. That was, I was about 30, 35 years old.
And at what age were you when you first connected with Fred and his wife?
22.
Okay, so your parents were still alive for 13, what was that, 11 years?
Yes.
Yeah.
Because I have a father and a stepfather, and they both died in the same year. And then my mother died about 10 years later. And
okay.
I was not close to any of them. Once I went away to Oberlin, and a lot of it had to do with the cruelty and abuse in my childhood. And so I met some of the most wonderful strangers. My friends lived with Lady Aberlin and Mr. Joe Negri and Mr. McFeely and the other members of the cast. I felt very free and open and loving with them. They were my family, as a matter of fact. Wow. And so the time that I spent with Fred Rogers, it just intensified the sense of belonging to him and with him.
So you, I mean, all told, I think you kind of had a relationship with Fred for over something like 25 years.
Yes.
That you guys were friends and castmates. How would you say your relationship evolved over that time?
Well, it was very interesting. I think he saw me more and more as an adult son, as opposed to a young 22-year-old son.
Yeah.
And some years later, I had a group called the Harlem Spiritual Ensemble. And I started that group about 1980 with scraps and pieces and trying to put it together. And I talked to Fred a lot. We started doing a lot of performances. And I came to Fred and I said, my schedule with the Harlem Spiritual Ensemble is becoming so intense, and so I was on the road sometimes 3, 4, or 5 months. And I'm not able to just pick up and come to Pittsburgh and film. That was about 1992. And he was so understanding, so understanding. He said, of course you have to follow your dream, Franz. Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood was his dream, but it was not mine. My dream was the Harlem Spiritual Ensemble. And we talked about that. So he gave me encouragement to go on those tours, to enjoy them, to share with my singers. They also loved him and were open and shared it with him. And his acceptance and love for them, he understood that in some ways they were also my cosmic children. And I mean, it was just the most wonderful sharing.
Have you ever considered how your ability or capacity to be a mentor, a parent figure to these students might have been different if you didn't have that kind of figure in your own life as a young man?
Well, I had the seeds inside of me of deep love, wanting to express it somehow or another. So I discussed it with him. But if I hadn't had somebody who understood as well as he did, because he encouraged me, he said, yes, friends, you have to be open and alert when there's a child around you that might need you. And maybe that's how you become a parent. We didn't know how it was going to happen, but if you're open to it, we believe that spiritually God would bring a child or children into my life. And that is exactly what happened. And when that little boy knocked on the door and he had a sippy cup, I gave him milk. I knew what I was doing. I was alert. This is my cosmic son. So I was aware because I had these conversations with Fred. And I saw how he had behaved with me. And that was so important to establish how I was going to relate to all of them, each and every one.
Do you think that that would have happened, though? Do you think that you would be the father figure that these students look up to now and have for years and years if you didn't have that kind of treatment from Fred, if he didn't open your mind to that? I mean, you've always been a spiritual person. Do you think you would have arrived at some of those same opportunities if you didn't have that relationship with him?
Well, I have to tell you, I think that we each have a karma. We have a life to live, our destiny, I feel. And I don't force that on anybody else. But I was born here with a purpose. Mm-hmm. I personally feel that everybody is born with a purpose. But it may take time for them to acknowledge what they're doing here. What I realized is that Fred Rogers, from his wisdom and his being 20 years older than me, mm-hmm. he saw something in me that was already there. He didn't create it and he didn't, establish it. He saw it already there. And because he saw it, he knew how to talk to me. He knew the things that touched me deeply. I, for example, spent a lot of time sharing with Fred what it was like being black and being a ghetto kid. He had no knowledge whatsoever of ghetto life. And so a lot of the time we spent together, I spent it in deep, deep sharing with him the passion and the pain that I had gone through in Birmingham and Youngstown and later on at Oberlin. He had no concept. What, friends? You went to bed hungry? I said, yes, I did. Wow. And sometimes there were four of us sleeping in one bed. And so that was tough, but we survived it. I'm still here. And so there were experiences that I had that he saw that he was interested. And he encouraged that part of me that was already there. And I'm so grateful. I am deeply, deeply grateful. So I feel it was my destiny to run into Fred and have him join in my life. And I joined with him and Joanne, my surrogate mother. And I'll be honest with you, I've had several surrogate mothers and fathers over the years because I recognized that I was hungry for a certain kind of love and care. And I was already a 23, 24, 25-year-old man. So there were some women who really took a motherly liking to me, man, let me tell you. And there were also some men who seemed to naturally fall into the role of father. And I accepted them and because inside I knew I was hungry. That I knew.
Yeah.
So he helped me to understand that I could run into mothers and fathers all over the country. And eventually I realized all over the world there were people whom I could turn to for deep, serious love. And the thing that was so surprising to me, I sat alone many times thinking, I'm black. And these people, whether they're Chinese, Japanese, or African or whatever, they were treating me in a way that my parents did not. And so that was something for me to think about and understand that maybe it's not color, it's something else. Yeah. We are relating with each other. And that's what I encouraged and nurtured. And, you know, I began to see my kids as my children, all of them, without focusing solely on whatever color or religion or society they were. I didn't care. I absolutely did not care.
I think we have to talk a little bit about possibly the most, I guess, iconic, famous, well-known segment that you appeared in with Fred. And I'm talking about the, I guess, maybe the first instance where he was soaking his feet in the kiddie pool and he notices Officer Clemens walking by and invites him over to cool off with him because it was a hot day. And you did, and you shared the pool and the water, and there was the towel that was draped over his shoulder that he eventually shared. At the time, did you understand the significance, like the historical significance of that moment at that time that it was happening?
I wish I could tell you, yes, I understood everything, but I did not. And it was quite a while before, because you see, Dr. King had just been assassinated on April 4th, 1968. And so it was some months later that we filmed that scene because I complained to him so intensely of my sense of loss. I said, can't you do something? I really put the burden on his lap. Huh. And I was surprised that when he came back to me, it wasn't what I thought it was going to be. And I was disappointed in when I read the script. And I thought, does he know what I'm talking about? I was definitely angry. And it was something I wanted to do actively to make up for it. And he gave me this script. And it looked so empty as I read it. And only while I was filming did I recognize that something was transpiring. And that something was lifting me up in a holy spiritual way. What is this man doing? What is he talking about? We just did something very common, put our feet in the same tub. And he was helping me dry my feet and put my boots on, none of which I needed. But I didn't understand the relationship to Peter and Jesus in the Bible. I just did not. So there were later on, there were times when I was with him and we would sit very quietly and he asked me, did I understand what he was trying to say with that scene? And it took a while and took his nudging me to go in there because I didn't feel Bible worthy. So I wasn't about to say you were Jesus and I was Peter. That was way too much for me. And eventually it came down to that he said that there was a relationship to how Jesus treated his disciples. And that was like the first time he ever really talked about me in terms of following his tradition. When he suggested we do a farewell, Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, he said to me, you already have read the script. I'll just bring it up to date a little bit. And instead of singing Children Can, I was supposed to sing There Are Many Ways to Say I Love You. Lord have mercy, that song. Just because I wasn't filming anymore did not mean that I wasn't involved with him and Joanne and the family, but I wasn't filming anymore. As a matter of fact, I did guest appearances. I went with him to Chicago and to Los Angeles and Houston and Dallas. I did a lot of personal appearances with him because I could fly in and we'd have our time together with the kids and everything. And then either that night or the next day, I would fly back to be with the Harlem Spiritual Ensemble. But I loved it.
Good for you for not ever giving up on your dream and what you knew that you were meant to be doing despite this opportunity that you had. and I'm sure he appreciated that, too.
He did. He told me on a number of times how much he had a deep appreciation for my individuality. I never treated him as though he were a big star and I was a little fan. It was quite often, it was the opposite. He was the fan and I was the polished singer who had studied opera and sang in German and French and Italian and came back to be with him. He was fascinated. He loved my singing. He loved the spirituals. Everything I was singing, he would ask me, what are you singing now? What are you doing now? And I was very often called on the carpet to sing for him right on the spot. Oh, sing me something, Franz, please, just sing. And I would sing for Fred. And
well, what amazing traditions and messages that you've carried through to this day to your students and to the world. And you know, I want to personally thank you for that. You've made a difference in so many people's lives. It's hard to even fathom.
Thank you very much. And I have to tell you, I'm very much aware of the love that comes to me from my, not only my fan mail, but from the emails and from my communications on Facebook. And recently I did a GoFundMe to raise $100,000 because I moved from my house into a senior citizen's residence. And it's very expensive here. So I put it right there, you know, to my fans and to my followers and people who love Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, please make a contribution because the GoFundMe is what caused the stress to go away.
we'll include a link to that GoFundMe in the episode notes, and we will encourage our listeners to make a donation. We'll also remind them about your memoir, Officer Clemens. And is there anything else that you would like to promote before we say goodbye?
Well, first of all, thank you very much myself. I've enjoyed chatting with you, and I just want to say I've always enjoyed sharing the life of Fred Rogers and our time together. In writing the book, I wanted people to have a written memoir of what his life was like and what it meant to me and how we related to one another. That's what it is. I wanted to say that.
Dr. Clemens, I just want to say, like, it's really been a pleasure and an honor getting a chance to speak with you. And I, too, just want to say thanks, you know, for joining us, but also for the work that you've done and the gifts that you sort of have given to the world throughout your life. So I just really appreciate it. And just thank you for taking the time to chat with us for an hour on an afternoon. So
there are many ways to say I love you.
Yes.
There are many ways to say I care about you. Many ways to say I love you.
I mean, I have nothing to say. That's.
Now I don't even have to ask you if you'll sing for us to close out the episode. You just went right into it. And we love you, too.
Thank you. Anytime.
Wow. Dr. Clemens.
Wow. Hey, thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Well, thank you for listening to Modern Dadhood, the podcast. And listen, wherever you listen, be it Apple, Amazon, Spotify, Pocket Cast, Overcast. Give me another one.
iHeartMedia.
Wherever you listen, consider leaving us a quick rating and a review. It would really go quite a long way for our little show. And if you can find it in your heart and find some time in your day, tell a friend about the show. We're out there.
Everywhere.
In the Instagram.
Facebook.
I've heard TikTok.
So
I haven't seen it, but LinkedIn. If you're into the business end of things.
YouTube.
And of course, on the internet at moderndadhood.com. Hold on.
That's Modern Dadhood with a D.
Yeah, I really lost a couple of consonants in that. Where you can find every one of our episodes, if that's your thing, if you want to listen straight at the .com.
At the
also,
source.
You can find there's a store, and you can find some very comfortable Modern Dad hoodies and t-shirts.
Get yourself a t-shirt, get added to the mailing list.
Send us a little note, get added to the mailing list. Or you could just write us an email at hey, H-E-Y, at moderndadhood.com.
Huge thanks to Casper Baby Pants and Spencer Albee for the music in the podcast. Thanks once again to Pete Morse at Red Vault Audio for his years of dedication to making us sound so good. And one more time, I want to give him a shout out and ask you to check him out at redvaultaudio.com or find him on social media. Thank you to Dr. Francois Scarborough Clemens for the amazing chat. And Mark Andrew Checkett, this one's
That's
for
me.
You.
That's me. I just want to say, from both me and Adam, thank you for listening.
Happy 101.
Oh, yay. Podcast. Is it modern?